In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. It's good to be here, right, Mitch?
Fantastic. Fantastic to be here.
It's fantastic to be here. We're recording this podcast January 19th. It's a Wednesday night.
It is Wednesday, my dudes.
It is Wednesday, my dudes. And we just had a super wild card weekend in the NFL. 6 playoff games, 3 days, a lot of blowouts, but the stage is set for the divisional round this weekend, so we will be getting into this past week's games, reacting to what we saw, obviously previewing the divisional round of the playoffs as well, Mitch, a bit of news, a bit of the regular stuff, NFL draft, and then today, a little treat here. It's been a minute. We've got a Mount Rushmore for you.
Yeah, we do.
So we're not going to tell you what it is yet. You got to stick around. So a Mount Rushmore today. But today, we're just focused on the NFL playoffs because this is the time of year. This is what's going on. This is what we want. This is what the people want. And we give the people what they want. Right, Mitch?
Yeah, it's NFL. There's nothing better than the NFL playoffs. There's nothing better than the NFL playoffs.
Nothing. And let's start with this, Mitch. Let's start with this because, as I alluded to, this past weekend, the 6 games in the end, there were quite a few blowouts. 4 out of the 6 games, in fact, were pretty big, double-digit margin victories. Not particularly close games. Even the 2 games that were 1-score margins weren't necessarily super close games, right? Like they weren't necessarily throughout it a dogfight battle, you know, neck and neck sort of affair. So we saw a bit of this week, and I saw a lot of people reacting on social media with the notion that this is why we should have never expanded the playoffs. This is why the NFL should never have added a 7th team. Because now every wild card weekend, we're just going to see blowouts. We're just going to see people getting blown out because the disparity between the teams is too high now. The 2 seed has to play the 7, and this is what we're going to see. And it irked me that people 2 years into this were already deciding to write it off with very little data. So I did a bit of digging, Mitch, because I wanted to know what the numbers said. Is this?
Well, we're nerds out here. We're nerds out here.
Well, and the numbers don't lie, right? So we can see what was it like before we expanded. We have 2 years of the 7th seed, right? This is not the first year of the expanded playoffs. Last year was expanded playoffs as well, right? So we have 2 years now of expanded playoffs. I did a bit of digging, just looking back a bit. And we could do more, but I thought the data that we pulled was sufficient to formulate a point here. So this year, in these 6 playoff games that we had, the average margin of victory was 17.1 points. That is a lot, right? And that makes sense because we saw a lot of blowouts this week. In 2020, last year, the first season of expanded playoffs, the point differential was 8.5. So half the margin of victory that it was this year. And that was in an expanded playoff. Now, the year before that, 2019 season, When it was just the normal six seeds, it was 6.0. The year before that, 5.7. The year before that, 6.5. So as you can see, at least the last 3 years of the six teams in the playoffs, it was about 6 points a game. One score games, that was about the margin. When we added a seventh team, it bumped up to 8.5. You know, still in the same range, but a little bit more as expected. This year, it was way more. It was double that. So I think, and we'll have to see with more years of this expanded playoff, my guess is that this is more of an outlier. Most of the time, we see pretty competitive games throughout the playoffs and even in the wild card weekend. You're going to have some blowouts here and there. You're going to have some tight games. It's how it is. This year is a little more disparity than normal. Perhaps it's just the NFL season, but I don't think that this is evidence that the NFL should go back to six or that the seven is just going to be, this is going to be the trend going forward. We need more data to figure that out, but this clearly seems like the outlier to me.
I mean, it sure is an outlier just because we have a smaller sample size. I mean, you're absolutely right. We're going to have to see this 3-4 years, 5 years, maybe even down the road to see if this is actually a true outlier. If it comes back next year and we're at an 8 point differential and we're doing that, you know, 7, 8, 9 point differential for the years to come, then yeah, it's probably not going to look like that bad of a decision. But if we're coming back into 16, then it's 17 again. Then it's 18, you know, and we're continuing to have these big blowouts that maybe need to reassess whether seven is really the right decision or not. But, you know, it's such a small sample size that I think right now it's just too early to tell. So for someone to say right now that it was a bad decision to expand to 17 just because you saw one instance of multiple blowouts and really kind of a weird out of the box NFL season where we saw a lot of things that we didn't expect to see. Hold your horses, wait to see how this thing plays out for a couple of years, because I think we may see some very different data down the road.
Sure. And I think, you know, you can pinpoint the 2-7 seeds this year, right? You have the 9-8 Eagles who didn't have a single win over a team above 500. Right, who were clearly outmatched against the defending Super Bowl champ Bucks, right? So, like, that's the 7 seed coming out of the NFC. The AFC, it's a 9-7-1 Steelers team with a half dead, half alive Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback that can't compete with the defending AFC champ 2 years in a row, Kansas City Chiefs, right? So, like, those are the 7 seeds. Last year, the 7 seed was a Phillip Rivers led Indianapolis Colts team that took it down to the wire against the number 2 seed Buffalo Bills. So, like, there's different, you know, the seeds, they come in different flavors, right? There's different quality of teams that can come in the 7 seed playoff. We could still get 7 solid teams into the playoffs. This year, those 7 seeds were particularly bad. They might not always be that way, you know?
And we've had plenty of years where when it was just 6 seeds, we had plenty of years where we had really bad 6 seeds.
Of course.
We had years where the 6 seed made the Super Bowl. Right. So, like, you know, it's really that unpredictable when it comes to playoff time. So to jump to conclusions that we shouldn't have expanded to 17 is just too early, premature.
Yeah, I thought the argument was interesting, and that's why I wanted to look at the numbers to see sort of what that looked like. And obviously, again, clearly this was an outlier in that regard, and we did see some blowouts. But let's jump into the games here, Mitchell. Let's start with the first game of the playoffs, Raiders at Bengals. Cincinnati wins their first playoff game since before text messages were invented. Mitch, nobody had ever sent anybody else a text message at any point in the history of text messages about a Cincinnati Bengals playoff win. Nobody had ever done it. It did not exist the last time the Bengals won a playoff game until this weekend. The Bengals got it done against the Raiders 26-19. And Mitch, this was a game where Cincinnati was really in control for most of this. Cincinnati seemed like the better team. They jumped out to an early lead, kind of held the Raiders off, and the Raiders made a last push. They had an opportunity at the end of the game. Derek Carr intercepted right on that final drive. So the Raiders gave themselves a shot, but the Bengals were in control most of this game at home in Cincinnati. And I thought the first half was really strong from Cincinnati. The offense looked great. Joe Burrow, this passing attack seems unstoppable. And I felt like they let off the gas in the second half and really kind of let the Raiders stick around in this game when they could have really put this away in the third quarter and coasted into a win. It was closer than it needed to be in that regard. Let's start with talking about reacting to the Bengals side of this and the win. What are your thoughts on the Bengals getting it done in their performance on Saturday?
I mean, Joe Burrow looks like a winner. 24 for 34, 244 and two touchdowns. Joe Mixon had kind of a rough ground, a game on the ground, but you know what? Joe Burrow was able to get it done with his boy, Ja'Marr Chase, leading the way there with 9 for 116. Didn't get one of the touchdown snags, but he really laid on CJ Uzoma or Azuma, however you
Uzoma,
want to pronounce it.
Uzoma, I think.
Uzoma. Yeah. I don't know. I've heard about four different pronunciations for that name. Really leaned on him as kind of his big target, you know, his big bodied guy that he needed to throw to. 6 for 64 and the touchdown. The Bengals defense, I mean, played well against the Raiders offense that has had at times shown to be really potent, but also at times shown to really struggle. So I think it was kind of a, you can't really grade a great read on what the Bengals defense is going to be moving forward in the playoffs, but Joe Burrow showed up, the Bengals offense showed up, and congratulations, Cincinnati, man. You've waited for this for a long time, and you finally get this one done.
Yeah, as you said, Mitch, Joe Burrow is a winner, and that's what I think my biggest takeaway from this game was, is Joe Burrow is one of those guys that you want to have as an NFL franchise. This is the type of quarterback that NFL franchises covet. It's why they trade heaven and earth to acquire guys, to move up in the NFL draft, to select guys they think will become that. This is why it is so valuable to get that early first round QB, that franchise guy, because when you have one, all of a sudden you could get it done. I mean, think about how many times the Bengals under Marvin Lewis in the Andy Dalton era, at other times, John Kitna. I mean, you had good teams, great players around them, solid infrastructures, but a quarterback who couldn't get you over the edge. I mean, that Bengals team in 2015 was one of the best teams in the NFL that year, and they lost in the first playoff game they had. They couldn't even like win one playoff game. But now you have Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow is a different type of animal. He is the guy that's going to go out and win you those games, and he proved it against the Raiders here, and it, you know, for the Bengals, I mean, we didn't expect them to be here. We didn't even expect them to win the division, let alone, you know, be hosting a playoff game and getting a win. This is huge for the future of Cincinnati. No matter what happens against Tennessee next week, you can rest assured in Cincinnati that you have your guy, and now it is about building the team around him. You have your window now. This is year two of Joe Burrow. You have a couple, two or three more years till you have to pay him a lot of money. Go, you got to go win the Super Bowl. You got to go. Your Super Bowl window's now. It has begun. The clock is ticking in Cincinnati already because of this win, because of what this means, because of what Joe Burrow has shown this year. So it's great times for Cincinnati. Mitch, as far as it goes for the Las Vegas Raiders, obviously a disappointing end to a season here. Obviously, there's a lot of credit that goes to Rich Bisaccia, Derek Carr, Max Crosby, the leaders on this team to overcome what they overcame this year. They've let go of Mike Mayock, the GM. Bisaccia has interviewed for the full-time head coach position, and they will obviously be bringing in other people as well. There are reports coming out of Michigan that if offered, Jim Harbaugh would accept the Las Vegas Raiders head coaching job, that he is interested in returning to the NFL in Las Vegas. So we'll see what the future of the team holds. But as far as this game goes and what this means for their 2021 season, what are your thoughts? What are you taking away from this and how things wrapped up here for Vegas?
I mean, a valiant effort, I think, with everything that happened. You really have to look at the situation of everything that went down this year. Las Vegas did just a fine job kind of hanging in there and getting it done. Rich Bisaccia did a fantastic job of stepping up when his number was called and leading that team to a playoff appearance. For those who are hard on Derek Carr, I want to say this to you. Derek Carr is not the problem. The institution that's around him has been the problem. Derek Carr has stayed consistently good. He's been a consistently good passer. He's never had good weapons around him. The front office has failed at getting him good weapons to throw to. And he has been a victim of circumstance. So I see all the Raiders fans on Facebook and Twitter saying Carr needs to go, Carr needs to go, Carr needs to go. Well, what do you expect? Did you expect Derek Carr to be Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? No. So he's not that. So why don't you get something around him? And he's never had that. Derek Carr has done what he's done with little to nothing around him. Derek Carr is not the one to blame for this loss, nor is really anyone in that Raiders organization. They just were outmatched. The Bengals are a better organization, a better team right now. And that's all there is to it. This is not Derek Carr's fault. I know that was a bad pass to end there at the game, but he's trying to make something happen. What do you expect the guy to do?
Yeah, I mean, this comes down to roster building, right? This comes to the failures in the NFL draft that the Raiders have had over the years under Mike Mayock and John Gruden, right? It's the misses that they've had in free agency. And it's the lack of, like you said, talent that they've built, depth that they've built on this team. And Derek Carr, you know, and listen, maybe, you know, I get it for Raiders fans because you saw a Joe Burrow. You saw one of those guys, a guy that can do it despite the circumstances. And Derek Carr is not that guy. But you can't have a bad infrastructure and then just go get that guy and expect just magically solve themselves. It's more than that. You need more than that. Joe Burrow is fantastic, but they also drafted Ja'Marr Chase, who is a superstar. And they also drafted T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, right? And they got, you know, and the defense, the signing of Trey Hendrickson. He, you know, they paid him a lot of money, and that was a question of moving the offseason. He was fantastic this year. They drafted Logan Wilson out of Wyoming, the linebacker, and he's emerged. Like, I mean, they've had hits around Burrow, and that's what allows a quarterback like that to elevate everything else. And so, again, with Carr, it is about what you've put around him. And the offensive line is shoddy. You have the emergence of Waller. You got nothing out of Henry Ruggs. You know, you got nothing out of some of these other assets that you've, you know, been surrounding him with. And for the Raiders, whoever takes over, like, it's going to be a tough situation on what you do at quarterback, what you do with the rest of the roster. Do you have enough money to retool around Derek Carr and make a run at it? Or is it time that you have to, you know, move on and reset in a way? They're in a very interesting spot here.
I'm a big Derek Carr advocate, and I'm going to stand with Derek Carr here. It's like you're asking a guy to dig a 6-foot hole and you give him a spoon.
Right.
I mean, you just have given him little to nothing to work with. This is why I'm being harsh on Raiders fans right now. It's like, you're expecting him to be something that he's not. Like, this guy can be a great quarterback. This guy can be a top 10 quarterback in this league, but he has nothing to throw to. I mean, when your top wide receiver is Zay Jones, what else do you expect him to do?
Well, I mean, they do have Darren Waller, but
but you know what? You can't throw to the tight end all the time.
I mean, he should target him 12 times, 15 times a game. But he's doing that because he has to.
Right. He's doing that because he has to. Hunter Renfrow is great. I think he'd be a great slot guy to have. But they haven't had a great outside guy. And for those of you that are complaining about Derek Carr, you haven't had a great quarterback since Rich Gannon. And Rich Gannon wasn't even that great. So let's stop your complaining. This is the best thing that has happened to the Oakland Raiders organization over the last 20 years at the quarterback position. And you guys are complaining about him. How about you give the guy something to work with, because he's the most talented guy at the quarterback position you've had since Rich Gannon. And I'm sick of Raiders fans complaining about it. You need to look institutionally. You need to look at the organization as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Raiders will be going in a new direction this year with a new GM, very likely a new head coach. But either way, a new direction. And they'll have some decisions.
I didn't mean to get that fired up about the Raiders, but you know.
It's good. I mean, it's again, they achieved so much this year, more than would have expected, considering the circumstances. And there's a lot of really solid players on this team that could be a part of a winning team. And you can see that, right? Guys like Max Crosby, guys like Hunter Renfrow, guys like Derek Carr. And so, you hope we'll see what they could do with what they have. But obviously going in a different direction here. The only other thing I wanted to mention in this game, Mitch, obviously this was a very controversial game, due to the officiating, some horrible officiating this game. That crew is no longer officiating for the rest of the NFL playoffs. It was that bad. And the biggest play was the whistle on the touchdown, you know, in the second quarter, which was, you know, it should have been called dead. Per the rule book, the play should be called dead if there's a whistle, and everything afterwards shouldn't have happened. But they didn't do it. The touchdown stood against the Raiders as a touchdown for the Bengals. And, you know, obviously it was very controversial. I felt like we couldn't talk about that game without mentioning it. We discussed this when we talked on Monday. We were hanging out that as bad as the decision might be to not follow the rule book there and just say the touchdown stands, we're not going to do anything about it. It would be a worse decision to reverse the touchdown, an obvious touchdown where the play was completely legal and a complete, you know, completed catch, and there was no question about what had happened. That to me is the more egregious decision that could have been made. So in that regard, I stand with the refs on that one. I think they made the right call there. They basically shit their pants and didn't know what to do about it. And you know, I either way, that wasn't a good decision, but they made the correct one, lesser of two evils in that situation.
Yeah. It's like a dancer that falls flat on his face on stage. Do you get up and run off stage, or do you keep dancing? Well, you get up and you keep dancing, you know? So, you know, they made the right call with just rolling with it and trying to do the best that they can with it. Obviously you cannot have an early whistle like that. And we've seen early whistles get blown all the time, especially on run plays, where guys will break out of stuff, you know, half a second after the whistle's blown. We've seen this happen before. And I mean, this has to go back to the rules change. You know, the rules change, the unnecessary roughness stuff. They're trying to blow it dead so guys don't get hurt. And I understand that, but you know,
but this was just an inadvertent whistle. This was just
an inadvertent whistle.
This
is
not a purposeful trying to stop the play.
But in a playoff game, you can't have it.
Right. Unexcusable, which is why they are no longer.
Let it stand and do it. And then, and then you just, you're like, you know what? You guys are done for the year.
Yep.
We can't have that going forward if this is going to be something. So,
well, and really what it is it's the optics. So you put those guys in another playoff game, and both sides of the ball, both teams, the entire fans in the stands, everybody knows that every play that you have can be questioned to the umpteenth degree, right? Because you have blatantly made mistakes in a playoff game before. So you just couldn't officiate a game. Everything that they would do would be booed, would be questioned, would be this, would be that, would be eviscerated. You just can't put those guys out there. You can't officiate a game properly under those circumstances. So, like the NFL just had no choice. You know what I mean?
You know, and what's so mystifying about this is that this is a Jerome Boger crew. Like, Jerome Boger is one of the lead officials in the NFL. Right. Like, one of the better officials in the NFL, and this is him and his crew, and this happens. It's like, it just seems really weird that it's coming from his crew. It's probably a fluke thing, but you can't have it. Gotta shut the crew down for the year. So
it is what it is. And here we go, Mitch. Let's go on to the other Saturday game, another AFC wildcard game, Patriots at Bills. And Mitch, this was a blowout, the biggest blowout of the week, and the Bills absolutely dominated the Patriots 47-17. I had the Patriots in this game, Mitch. I thought the Patriots were going to eke out a tough one. I just wasn't going to bet against Bill Belichick, but the Bills came out and essentially pitched a perfect game on offense. They pitched a perfect game. You could not have had a better offensive game than what the Bills had. They scored a touchdown on every single offensive drive other than a kneel down at the end of the first half and a kneel down at the end of the second half. They are the first team in the NFL history to not attempt a single punt, a single field goal, or I believe a single fourth down play at all in the game. I mean, that is just absurd. And they did this, Mitch, in the playoffs against a division rival, against Bill Belichick, one of the greatest defensive minds of all time, in the third meeting of the season. Like, and you against a defense that's been top five, top 10 all year. And they pitched a perfect offensive game. It's insane, Mitch. It is insane what Buffalo did. And it really shakes up the picture of the AFC playoffs? Because we were going into this last week like I don't know. Who do you take? Chiefs by default at this point? You don't believe in Tennessee. Buffalo was kind of they were good at times, but they were, you know, not super impressive. You never felt good about anybody. All of a sudden, Buffalo does this. I mean, is Buffalo the new team to beat in the AFC? Is that definitive, or can we say that out of this game?
Well, I want to be very clear. I have always stood by Buffalo.
Of course, sure, right.
This is not a we conversation now. That is, I mean,
you had them in the Super Bowl. Well, no, it could be we other than just me. Maybe on this podcast, it's me.
I just want to be clear. There are people.
I think the general thought going into these playoffs was
it was Chiefs. Sure, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think Bill Belichick, it sounds like he wants to coach at age 70. Sounds like he's coming back for another year. I know that he had said in previous conversations in years past that he said he didn't want to coach past 70, but sounds like he's coming back for age 70. And I think he's fully capable of doing that. As far as the Bills go, man, I am ready to put Josh Allen in elite quarterback conversation.
Yeah.
I'm ready to put him up there with Aaron Rodgers. I'm ready to put him up there with the Russell Wilsons. Those type of quarterbacks that you talk about as elite quarterbacks, I'm ready to do that with Josh Allen. I think that he fully deserves it. 21 for 25, 308, 5 touchdowns, 98.5 QBR. He has led his team now to multiple playoff appearances. He got the run game got going. Devin Singletary showed up 16 for 81, got the 2 touchdowns is there as well. Buffalo's legit. And if I'm anyone in the AFC, I don't want to run into Buffalo. I just don't. Even if I'm Kansas City at home, I don't want to run into Buffalo. Like, not at all.
Yeah, I'm not after this performance. And Mitch, continue to talk about Buffalo here. The impression that I got watching this game was that I'm with you on the Josh Allen thing. He is definitely last year. And this is what we talked about after last season, right? He was MVP candidate in 2020. They had a breakout year, number 2 seed in the AFC, AFC championship game against Kansas City. But it was, what is he going to do next year? Can he repeat that level of success? And he did dip this year, as I expected. That was just unreasonable to think he was going to just continue at that high level. But they were still a good team this year. They're 11-6. They win the AFC East. They host a playoff game. And then he does this in the wild card game. And so I'm with you. I think he has proven to be one of those top tier elite guys. And when I see him, I see a modern Brett Favre, a guy where when he's on, almost nobody can beat him. But you're also going to get a lot of, sometimes it's going to look really bad. Right. And Favre was like that. When it was really bad for Favre, sometimes it was just really bad and he tried to do too much. And Josh Allen gets into that where sometimes he tries to do too much and you'll see him fall flat. We saw that his first playoff game against Houston, right? The Texans a couple years ago, there were some famous plays where he's just running around like a chicken with his head cut off. Like he's just trying to do too much. But when he's on, like he was on Saturday, there's almost nobody that could beat him. Who could beat what they did on offense? I mean, that is, it's crazy. And so we're looking at a modern NFL Brett Favre in front of our eyes. And we get to see him play against Patrick Mahomes this week. I mean, what a freaking treat. That's incredible.
I love it. I love Josh Allen. I love Brett Favre. So, give
that's
me
just
all
what I see. That's just the vibes matchup. It is, it's
yeah,
great.
Give it all
great.
To me. I mean, I love it. Yeah.
On the other side of the ball here, Mitch, let's talk about the Patriots whose season ends here in Buffalo for their quarterback, for Mac Jones. It was a tough performance for Mac Jones, but this is, again, going back to the elite and not elite quarterback conversation we had with the previous game. It's the same situation. If you're New England, you're looking on the side of the ball and you're like, that's what a truly elite quarterback can do for you. And we have Mac Jones, who under the best of circumstances can be successful, but when the circumstances aren't ideal, is never going to take you over the edge. And they couldn't run the ball against Buffalo, which is what has opened everything up for New England this year. Their fantastic offensive line in that run game couldn't run the ball against Buffalo, and it limited everything they did on offense. And as far as Mac Jones goes, if they want more out of Mac Jones, they just got to give him more weapons, Mitch. I mean, he's throwing to Kendrick Bourne, Jacoby Myers, right? Like, this is not Nelson Aguilar. Like, that's, listen, I know they spent money in free agency. They added Henry and Jonnu Smith. Like, they added guys, but they need to seek truly elite talent pass catching for their rookie quarterback. They have a solid offensive line. They have a run game that can work. They need more pass catchers. They should be targeting free agent wide receivers, drafting a wide receiver in the first round. They need to get somebody there with them. And this team should be another playoff team. I think they, you know, Belichick has quickly turned this around with this rookie quarterback and built an infrastructure and a roster that can regularly compete for a playoff spot. Can they be a Super Bowl contender with Mac Jones? The roster's got to get better and we got to see more from him. But this is, I mean, this is best case scenario if you're the Patriots coming into the season. I mean, to make the playoffs at all, win 10 games with a rookie quarterback, like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think this team played exceptionally well. They outperformed what I thought they were going to do. But you're absolutely right. This has also never been Bill Belichick's MO. Like, they struck gold with Julian Edelman that wound up, you know, panning out exceptionally well. And other than that, it's been Randy Moss was the big splashy deal. So, like, right. Other than that, they haven't had the big wide receiver that they could go to every time. But they also had to have – they also had Tom Brady that can make sure. Anything work.
And Rob Gronkowski, so, right?
Well, and so Rob Gronkowski.
Him, you know, as a weapon.
Yeah, sure.
And,
you could throw him in there. But, like, yeah. Even then, you could count him on one hand. Right. So, it's kind of Bill Belichick's MO. I definitely agree that – New England needs to get some more stuff around Mac Jones. And I think that that's the way you cultivate a young quarterback is to get him options to throw to. When you have nothing to throw to, it really just puts them in a hole. It puts them in a bad spot. Give them things to throw to better than Kendrick Bourne and Jacoby Myers and any one of the 19 guys that might come out of the Patriots backfield. Just like give him two solid targets.
Right.
Exactly. And then I think he's talented enough to make the others work.
Right.
So just, I think there's definitely some roster building needs to happen in New England, but they definitely outperformed a great season for New England. I think this was a successful season for them, 10 wins and a wild card appearance. And it's going to be really exciting to see what they do moving forward.
For sure, Mitch. Let's go to Sunday's slate of games. The first NFC wild card game, the 2-7 game. Philadelphia Eagles traveling to Tampa Bay to take on the Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers get the win 31-15. Mitch, Tom Brady, excellent in this game, 29 of 37, 271 and two. No Fournette, no Ronald Jones. So Keyshawn Vaughn getting the carries, Gio Bernard. The run game was decent. I mean, this is a banged up team. I mean, I just mentioned the two running backs, obviously no Chris Godwin, no Antonio Brown. You saw Tristan Wirfs and Ryan Jensen get banged up in this game along the offensive line. Wirfs came back in, then came back out. He looked bad with an ankle. He was like useless after that injury. Jensen was clearly banged up. We know how they're banged up on the defense. They got a matchup with a team that was thoroughly outmatched in the Eagles. So they survived this game. They not survive. I mean, they were up 31-0, right? The Eagles scored some late touchdowns here, but this was never a close game. Buccaneers were well in control here. But when I speak about the Buccaneers, Mitch, I'm just not impressed by this win. Like, maybe 31-0 should be impressive against the Eagles, but the Eagles consistently shot themselves in the foot. They're a young team, first time there, didn't know how to handle it. And the Buccaneers have to play a really good Rams team next week. So I'm worried for the Bucs. Coming out of this game, I'm worried for the state of their team. They were supposed to win this game. They did their job. It's not like anything they did in particular was unimpressive. I just don't feel confident in their chances next week based on the status of their roster and the amount of injuries that are piling up.
Yeah, I mean, not to foreshadow, but Tom Brady's won his last Super Bowl. I mean,
wait, what?
Yeah, he's already won his last Super Bowl. You know, this
that
is
was it, huh? 20, you know, beat Mahomes. That was it.
Now we'll get to that later. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they won a game they should have won. It wasn't impressive. They obviously let off the throttle there at the end with 15 sure. unanswered
when you're up 31-0, who the hell cares? You got the game in the bag, you know.
Offensive line's banged up. Wide receiver core is banged up or having a mental breakdown. The running back's core is banged up right now. Keyshawn Vaughn did just a fine job stepping in, I think, and Gio Bernard did as well. But yeah, I mean, this was not an impressive win by any means. And if I'm Tampa Bay, I'm really worried about going into LA and playing.
They will be at home. Be at home.
Which, going into the week playing LA.
Which is huge. I mean, you think about that Niners-Rams game, week 18, the implications of that game and the Niners getting the win there. Obviously, they make the playoffs, not the Saints. The Rams are the 3 seed, not the 2 seed, which means that this game gets played in Tampa Bay instead of SoFi Stadium. And that, you know, that plays a huge role.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So Mitch, let's talk about Philly here for a little bit, right? Cause we'll get into Tampa Bay, LA a little bit more. Obviously pretty easy win for the Bucks here, but for the Eagles, obviously an overperforming season for them to get to 9-8, to get into the playoffs. We know what their schedule was. We know the quality of opponent, but they got there. They got the wild card with Jalen Hurts. And I think, Mitch, that this was a very successful season and they're well positioned to begin a series of playoff runs over the next couple of years. I think the question coming into the season was, could you build around Jalen Hurts? Could you find a successful team around Jalen Hurts? And I believe that you can be confident in doing that now. I think Jalen Hurts proved enough this year to tell you, if we could get better pieces around him and he continues to improve because he is just a second year guy, that this could be a legit playoff team and a legit contender in their division. You have 3 first round picks to use to add around him, to add to your defense, to continue to retool. There are moves to be made, but they're well positioned right now, I think, to improve this team and be even better and contend for the NFC East this next season. So if you're Philly, I think you should be feeling really good about where you're at. Nick Sirianni in his first season as a head coach makes the playoffs. This is positive stuff for Philly. And I think that they've, in my opinion, they found the quarterback of the future. And I think they need to give Hurts the opportunity, invest around him in the next couple of years and try this out.
Philadelphia didn't just find the quarterback of the future. They found the quarterback of the past. Let me tell you what I mean. They found Randall Cunningham again.
Ooh.
They found Randall Cunningham again. And let me tell you why. Jalen Hurts, good arm. Even better legs. He is a playmaker. He is a guy that takes nothing and makes something out of nothing. He does that time in and time out. You can ask him to rush for 100 yards. You can ask him to throw for 300 yards. He does that. And it's not always going to look pretty. It's not always going to look pretty, but he will get it done. If you just build around Jalen Hurts, this is your next Randall Cunningham. Forget the sabermetrics. Forget the numbers. This is the guy that you need to build around. This is the guy you need to have moving forward. Jalen Hurts is Randall Cunningham Jr.
I love it, Mitch. I love it. I really do believe in Hurts. I think he proved enough this year. He's a winner in my mind. He's the type of leader that you want on your team. He's not Lamar Jackson athlete. Right. He's not a Drew Brees pocket passer. Like, he's not the best quarterback in the league. He doesn't have the best tools. He's not the best quarterback, but I think he's the guy that can get it done. And if you surround him with more, because I mean, think about this. They had the best offense. They had the best rushing offense in the league with Jalen Hurts, Miles Sanders, and Boston Scott. You know what I mean? Like, imagine how much better that could be. Their offensive line is great. They got to continue to keep that as a strength. You've got Dallas Goedert, Devontae Smith, who you spent that first round pick on this year. That's great. Got to add another weapon there. Got to have at least another pass catching option there. And then along the defense, like, you've got room to improve along the defensive line in the second level. You've got some good secondary pieces, but like, I mean, you add a couple solid players. They have 3 first round draft picks. Like, all of a sudden you could turn this thing around in a couple of years. The Eagles could really be legit. So I think, again, going into the season, the question was going to be, can Jalen Hurts prove to you that he's the guy and you don't have to spend a first round pick on a quarterback? And I think he's done enough for the Eagles front office to feel confident in investing in him as the guy, using those draft picks to build around him and really make a run at this thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So great season for Philly. Tough way to lose, you know. But this is what young teams want, right? Just a shot. Let's get some playoff experience. You know, who cares if you lose the game to Tom Brady? Like, you're not supposed to win that one. But the next time you go in the playoffs now, you're going to be prepared. You've been through the jitters. You know what to expect. Like, you're going to come in better suited to win. And this is just a positive experience for a young Philly team. Mitch, let's talk about Niners and Cowboys. The only upset of the weekend. The only lower seed upsetting a higher seed. The only road win of the weekend. The Niners beat the Cowboys at Jerry World. I predicted this in the quick picks, Mitch. I said I would not trust Mike McCarthy. I would not trust the Cowboys. I was right to do so. They had what? It was the most penalized game in Cowboys playoff history. They played awful. They shot themselves in the foot repeatedly. They failed on the last play of the game. This is embarrassing for the Cowboys. This is embarrassing for the Cowboys. But Mitch, we can get into the Cowboys. Let's talk about the Niners first, maybe. You want to talk about the Niners first?
I don't think that. Well, okay. I don't think there's much to talk about the Niners here. They went in and they won. I mean, that was the goal, right?
Yeah.
Get in one. They've never won pretty. We don't expect them to win pretty. And they went in and they did their job. I don't think there's much to talk about the Niners.
Well,
Go ahead.
No. I think the one thing I will say, because the offense, it wasn't pretty. They just did what they needed to do. Elijah Mitchell, run game, whatever. Jimmy G didn't do very well. This defense, though, was impressive. I mean, this was the number one offense in the NFL in the Dallas Cowboys. And that Niners defense came in. They had 5 sacks on that Cowboy on Dak Prescott. They got a pick. They held the Cowboys to 17 points. 10 of those came in the fourth quarter. That Niners defense was stifling, and it didn't matter who was rushing the passer. I mean, guys you didn't even hear of. I think they were pulling fans out of the stands, putting Niners jerseys on them and sending them in, and they were getting past the O-line for the Cowboys. I mean, they were eating them alive, and that was impressive to me, because if the Niners stand a shot, if they stand any chance against Green Bay, they've got to be able to do what they did on defense against the Cowboys. And so they did it. I mean, they held them down to 17 points. That's impressive to me for the Niners, and a good sign for them moving forward. Hopefully Nick Bosa is healthy. I know he missed some time, a lot of time in this game. Hopefully he's healthy to play. Fred Warner injured at the end of the game. He indicated that he's okay, hoping to play this week. Obviously you miss those two guys. There's no chance, but impressive the way the Niners defense showed out in this game.
Yes, they absolutely showed out. I mean, and this is kind of the MO of the Niners.
Can we talk about Deebo Samuel? Deebo Samuel, Mitch, is a top 5 running back in the NFL.
No, he's not.
Yes.
But, okay.
Yes,
no,
he is.
No,
yes,
he's not. Is. But okay,
yes,
whatever.
Yes, he is. I'm convinced. 10 of 72. If you put Deebo Samuel in a Derrick Henry like workload in a role like a running back, he would be a top 5 running back in the NFL.
Okay, so then give me your top 5 off the top of your dome.
Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Jonathan Taylor, Deebo Samuel.
That's 4. You can't think of another one?
Maybe Aaron Jones. Nick Chubb. I'd probably know Nick Chubb in there.
I'd put Nick Chubb and Aaron Jones both above Deebo Samuel.
I don't know, man. I'm just saying.
If Deebo Samuel, No. So here's the deal. Deebo Samuel is a great Swiss Army knife. He's great.
Can you call him a Swiss Army knife when he has 10 carries in the game?
I can when he's listed as a wide receiver and still goes 3 for 38.
Isn't Cordell Patterson still listed as a wide receiver?
No, Cordell Patterson was, I'm pretty sure, listed as a running back, and he's not a top 10 running back. Look, Deebo's great. Deebo's great. He's not a top 5 running back in the NFL. That's an absurd thing to say.
He's
absurd.
He's a top 5 running back and a top 5 wide receiver.
Position. What are you talking about?
He's a top 5 running back and a top 5 wide receiver.
Oh, you are out of your dome. You are out of your
incredible
fucking dome.
There's nobody who's doing what he's doing.
You
right
are
now.
Out of your
he
skull.
He is the only reason. He's
that.
The only reason that the Niners offense is anywhere competent because of how versatile of a weapon he is. It's incredible what he's doing.
I don't even want to talk sports with you anymore. Like, you should be banned from talking football if you think that Debo is top five in both positions. Yeah, you're out of your mind. Out of your mind.
Top five right now in both. No question in my mind. Mitch, let's talk about Dallas now. What the hell happened? What are they doing? How does Mike McCarthy have a job?
Mike McCarthy should be fired.
What are we doing?
I don't know who I don't know who verified. I don't know who gave the green light to that very Cowboys fans out there that said that wasn't designed. It was a designed quarterback draw.
Yeah.
Watch the play. Watch the receivers. It is a designed quarterback draw. It is clear as day. Mike McCarthy, I don't know if he gave the green light on that play call.
Kellen Moore, somebody's got to be responsible.
I would have a really hard time believing it's Kellen Moore, though. I would have a really hard time.
He's the offensive play caller.
But as good as
McCarthy's coming over top of him in that play and saying, you've got to call a QB run. I don't know, man.
I think so. Wow. I think Mike McCarthy is a little bit big headed. I think he's a little bit, big swinging dick in the office. And what I say goes. I think that he's a little bit like that. I have a hard time believing Kellen Moore called that play in that situation. Kellen Moore is too good of an OC to do that. This seems like a Mike McCarthy call, black and white, pure, clear as day, Mike McCarthy call. The guy shouldn't be coaching the NFL. I think I pin the blame on that play call. I pin the blame on this playoff loss. You've had the best opportunity to go make a Super Bowl run in, I don't know, at least 10 years. At least 10 years you've had your best opportunity, and you blow it. You blow it. This is not a Dan Quinn thing. This is not a Kellen Moore thing. This is a Mike McCarthy thing. And I also want to pin blame on all the Cowboys stars. Dak, where the hell were you? Zeke, where the hell were you? Amari Cooper, where the hell were you? CD Lamb.
Well, that's on Dak.
No.
Right?
When CD Lamb is dropping passes like that, that's on CD Lamb. CD Lamb, where the hell were you? Their stars didn't show up when the stars are supposed to show up. The Cowboys are a joke. They're the most disgusting. They're the most disgusting. Unbelievable franchise in sports because they can't get it done when it matters.
I feel about them how you felt about the Chargers a couple weeks ago when you were like, I'm just not going to trust the Chargers anymore. Why do we keep thinking the Chargers are going to do it? Why do we keep thinking the Cowboys? Right. Why do we keep thinking the Cowboys are actually going to win a playoff game? Like they cannot. They cannot do it. They consistently fall short when they need to. And Mitch, this was the year. This was the year for them to make a playoff run because Zeke Elliott gets paid like $20 million next year. Dak Prescott increases in salary like $15 million. His cap hit goes up as his new contract comes into play. Their offensive line is getting more expensive. They're going to have to let Michael Gallup go. They can't pay him anymore. They've got to let all these other guys go. Like they are not getting better next year. They are going to get worse as the roster gets more expensive. So this was the year that you had the right formula put together to make that Super Bowl run. And now you're stuck in a bad spot and you're going to need guys to come out of nowhere and contribute at a higher level. And you're going to need to hit every draft pick that you make. Like you're in a really tough spot when you're paying Ezekiel Elliott as much as you do. And he had 12 carries for 31 yards in a playoff loss for you. Like what the hell is that? What the hell is that? That's insane. What are we doing here, Mitch? And whether the last play call of the game is on Kellen Moore, Mike McCarthy, Dak Prescott, whoever the hell called it, the loss is on Mike McCarthy. When you're the most penalized team in Cowboy history in your playoff loss, that's on the head coach. That discipline, getting it done when it matters, that's on the leader of the team. And the leader of the team is the head coach. That's what that guy gets paid to do. And he failed in that regard. And he's failed as a head coach here in Dallas. He failed at the end of his tenure in Green Bay. He was carried by Aaron Rodgers for years. Why are we still doing this? It makes no sense, Mitch. If Jerry Jones just runs this shit back with Mike McCarthy in control, I think Cowboys fans need to form a coup and get his ass out of there. How do you oust him? You got to figure it out, because this is malpractice. Can you sue him for like malpractice? Like, I don't know what, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what like, that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to put all the blame on Mike McCarthy, because this is a Jerry Jones issue. He kept Jason Garrett. He kept Jason Garrett employed far too long.
Yes.
He parted ways with Jimmy Johnson.
We know right how involved he's in these decision making too. So he's in the room when they're paying Ezekiel Elliott all this money.
Look back on his leadership, decisions. He parted ways with Jimmy Johnson right when they were winning Super Bowls. He parted ways with Barry Switzer right when they were winning Super Bowls. He hasn't made a great hire since. Like, the guy doesn't know football. He knows oil. He was an oil guy that bought a football team. That's what Jerry Jones is. You know, it just seems like malpractice to me, man. You know, it's really bad.
Cowboys are in a bad spot because,
institutionally speaking, the Cowboys are the worst organization in professional sports.
Wow. I don't know. I don't know if I'd go as far as that, but listen, that's fine.
I will stand on that.
It's fine. I'm ridiculous because I said Deebo Samuel's a top five running back, but you know,
even when they're good, they can't win.
I just, they're, like I said, things are just not going to get better for Dallas because their cap situation doesn't get any better. Their contracts are going up. They're going to lose good players. And this was arguably their best situation the next 5 years to win a Super Bowl. And they couldn't even win one playoff game. So, Mitch, let's go to the Sunday night game here. Final AFC wild card game. Chiefs hosting the Steelers, and the Chiefs do what the Chiefs do. And this was, Mitch, this was vintage Kansas City. This felt like 2019 Kansas City in this game. It started off slow, 0-0 in the first half. Kansas City struggled, fluky interception. He had the pick six by TJ Watt, or the, you know, fumble recovery, whatever it was, a fluky defensive touchdown. And then Kansas City puts up three touchdowns in the second. They put up 14 more points in the third, and it was over. And they just, and they ran it up the way that only Kansas City could just run up the score out of nowhere. And all of a sudden you're out of it. You're three touchdowns down and it's over. Patrick Mahomes was 30 of 39, 404 yards and five touchdowns with the one pick in this game. What I'm taking away from this for the Chiefs is that this is the kind of performance they're going to need to go back to the Super Bowl for a third time in a row. I mean, this is what it's going to take. Their defense is not the defense of that 2019 team and that playoff run that they had. The defense was top 10. This is not the same defense. They can muster it at times, but they need Mahomes to be like this. And they need this offense to flow like this and to be loosey-goosey and to be able to put up 40 on anybody. And certainly they might need it against Buffalo next week. So that's what I'm taking away from this win for Kansas City, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do this again. Patrick Mahomes is going to have to throw for 400, which I don't think he will against that great Buffalo Bills defense. I think that, you know, he's really going to have to pull some tricks up from up his sleeve to get this thing done against the Bills, because pulling off this game against the Steelers is no surprise. The Steelers are the Steelers. We didn't even think they were going to be in the playoff conversation with 2 weeks left to go in the season, and somehow they were there. A great game by Kansas City, but you know what? They're going to have to probably even perform a little bit better against the Buffalo Bills to get something done in order to get back to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, certainly can't get off to the slow start that they did in this game, right? You're going to have to be able to.
You're going to pay for it. You're going to pay for it.
Because you might have only been down 7-0 by the time that fluky touchdown happened in this game, but you're going to be down 20-0. Right. You know, if you're not careful against a team like Buffalo. Let's talk about Pittsburgh. Mitch, in this game, it's the end of the era of Ben Roethlisberger. Final game for him, 29 of 44, 215, two touchdowns. He averaged 4.9 yards per completion. That's about what Ben Roethlisberger has been for the last couple of years. They couldn't run the ball at all against this Kansas City defense, and they couldn't take advantage of passing against them like other teams will be able to because of the limitations that they have. So, Mitch, to me, the future of Pittsburgh, all this just comes down to what they do at quarterback, because this is clearly a defense that's capable of supporting a playoff team. Najee Harris, the pass catchers that they have, even the offensive line, which could use improvement for sure, but a above average to great quarterback can take this team and be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. The question is going to be, will they find that? Can they go trade for that guy? Are they going to draft that kid in the NFL draft and hope to develop him into that guy? Like, what path do they go? That's what I'm interested in Pittsburgh this offseason. Do they chase a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers, or are they targeting Matt Corral or the Pittsburgh product, Kenny Pickett, in the NFL draft?
Yeah, I mean, this team is primed to do what, you know, with the exception of the last couple of years when Pittsburgh didn't have a good rush offense. They've always done, you know, great defense, good run game, and then have a good to great quarterback to lead you. Never light up the stat book. This is obviously the end of an era. I think that you're absolutely right. What they do at the quarterback position is going to be indicative of what the next 10 years are for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do they go draft a Kenny Pickett or a Matt Corral? Do they go out and reach into the free agent market and try to go get a quarterback there, or try to make a trade for a quarterback? They need to figure out the situation there. Big Ben, by the way, through all the controversy, I applaud you. Congrats on a great career. But your day in the sun is over, my guy. It's time to ride off into the sunset. And a new era will be happening in Pittsburgh.
For sure. And it's, the success that Mike Tomlin has had there is just incredible. And the consistency that had, if I'm a rookie, if they do go to the rookie quarterback route, I mean, we're looking at, I think, a situation similar to what we saw in New England. In fact, probably definitely a better situation than New England. And New England was great for Mac Jones, who came right in, had immediate success. I think a guy like Sam Howell or Kenny Pickett, some of these more established products who, don't have the high upside, but have the lower ceiling or the higher ceiling. I think a product like that could come into this team and immediately find success and immediately make the playoffs and compete. And so we'll see if that's the type of, player they go after, or they, what direction they go there. Will certainly be fascinating team to watch this offseason. Mitch, let's talk about the final playoff game Monday night, the first Monday night playoff game in NFL history, the Cardinals at the Rams in SoFi Stadium, home of the Super Bowl this season, and the Rams blow out the division rival Cardinals here 34-11. Rams led 21-0 at halftime. This game was just an absolute struggle for the Cardinals. Let's talk about the Rams here, Mitch. An impressive win for the Rams against a division team that, was 8-1 on the road this year, was, faded down the stretch, but this was a tough team. Kyler Murray, this is a tough, challenge. The Rams handled it perfectly. Matt Stafford efficient with what he was doing. The run game particularly solid. And how about Cam Akers, who tore his freaking Achilles 6 months ago and is back playing in this game, and he looked damn good.
17 carries.
I mean, he looked good at times. This guy tore his Achilles before the season, and he's playing in the playoffs. It's incredible. Having him and Sony Michel is going to be really challenging for teams. That's a great two-headed attack there. The offense was solid, as always, took advantage of the strong defense, this pass rush, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Leonard Floyd. I mean, it is relentless. This is a really impressive Rams team, Mitch. And again, I kind of alluded to this earlier when we talked about the Bucs, but I'm worried for Tampa Bay. That pass rush against a hobbled offensive line and a 44-year-old quarterback, that is not the situation I'd want to be in. I think if you're the Rams, you're feeling good about this matchup, even though you do have to go on the road. This was the type of win you wanted to see, the type of momentum you wanted to build going into next week.
Yeah, I mean, impressive win by the Rams. Matthew Stafford, 13 for 17, 202 and two touchdowns. Didn't have to do a whole lot. They had great field position the whole game. This Rams defense showed up. Kyler Murray did not. And I think that we go back to our conversation we've had multiple times about the Browns. And I think we had this conversation about the Cardinals earlier this year, where we just might be a year too early on the Cardinals. 11-6, nothing to scoff at. I mean, this team was a wild card team, but when we expected the excellence out of them when they started 7-0, I think that at least myself, I was just a year too early on the Cardinals. I think Kyler Murray needed to get his ass whipped in a playoff game in order to grow more as an elite NFL level quarterback. I think he needed this loss, but the Rams are absolutely scary. Absolutely scary moving forward, and I wouldn't want to be the team that's going to run into them. The Bucs are going to have a real task on their hands.
Yeah, I think as far as Arizona goes, Mitch, I mean, I feel the same way as we knew when we talked about Philly, that this was the type of experience you want as a young team. You need this taste. You got and listen, they went, maybe not all in, but they really pushed their chips in this year, in the last couple years, to make a run with Kyler Murray. They trade for DeAndre Hopkins. They bring in JJ Watt, right? They bring in, they brought in players. They've made investments, and they've sort of pushed to facilitate this roster with moves and make a push. And they overachieved this year. They overachieved because Kyler Murray had a stretch of the season where he was playing at an MVP level. And that's a great sign for the Cardinals moving forward. Because if he could do that all year round, he's an elite type guy, and you've found yourself one of those guys. And I think Kyler Murray could absolutely be that type of player, but he's growing into that. And this is still just his third season. So positive progress for the team moving forward. You've got to continue to improve the offensive line. You've really got to find an answer in this run game. Chase Edmonds, James Conner, that is not a sufficient combination. You need to pair Kyler Murray with an elite running back that allows you to unlock that run game and opens up everything that you can do in the pass game. You continue to improve on defense, which the defense was vastly improved this season in general. Continue to develop the young players that you have there on that side of the ball. And you're back in the playoffs next year, and maybe you're competing for the division. So this is positive progress for the Cardinals. Again, overachieving, but they supplemented their holes with moves like Rodney Hudson, right, and DeAndre Hopkins and JJ Watt, but their depth is not there, and that was what was proven in this game. They need to continue to build the roster, create a deeper, more talented team, and continue to build around your franchise quarterback.
Absolutely, you're hitting the nail on the head. Not deep at all. They got to work on the depth.
All right, Mitch, that's it for the wild card weekend recap. We'll get into our quick picks here at the end of the podcast, as we always do. But we do want to get into a couple nuggets of news.
Yeah, that's right. We do. Let's get into the news! I don't think I've ever done it that late.
That's perfect.
Ever done it that late. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you didn't go full strength, or else Linda might be real mad. You know, it's getting later in the evening.
Yeah, it is 6 o'clock. You never
know. Mitch, we have a couple things we wanted to do. First, our weekly Kraken update, because it has been a minute since we've talked about the boys. And the boys have been struggling. They were losers of 9 straight games until the other night, 2 nights ago, where they snapped that 9-game losing streak, beating the Blackhawks in a shootout, 3-2, the first shootout win, Seattle Kraken history. Mitch, the boys are 11-23-4 this season. That is not good, but we're an expansion team, and the Knights of Vegas, they're an outlier. Okay. This is the reality. Being an expansion team in the NHL, they're one of the worst teams in the NHL, but that's fine. That's okay. We're continuing to grow. Good to see them fight in the midst of adversity, 9-game losing streak. Come back and you get it done. You'll love to see that.
Yeah, you do. You really do. We have not given up the most goals, and we have not scored the fewer points, the most or the least points.
There you go.
So
okay, so suck it, everybody else.
We're not the lead, we're not the worst offense, and we're not the worst defense. So right. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Of note for the Kraken, though, Mitch, the NHL All-Star rosters were announced, and the first ever Seattle Kraken All-Star, Jordan Eberle, the wing, number 7. He's got 12 goals on the season, 12 assists. He's been one of their best players and most consistent players this year, and he gets the nod in the Pacific Division All-Star team. So there you go. Shouts out to the first ever All-Star in Seattle Kraken history.
Do got to get him shout out, man. You know, he still does have a plus minus differential for him. Yeah, he still has minus 17 when he's on the ice. But you know what? Guy's putting together an all-star season. An all-star season, and I love it. Got to love the first Seattle Kraken all-star to get on the ice for the all-star game. So shout out to Jordan Eberle.
For sure.
Good first half for you, my friend.
Absolutely. Mitch, the other bit of news that we wanted to mention here, as we talked about last week with the end of the campus tour, we would be doing a weekly NFL draft update, continuing our players to know before the NFL draft as we head towards that date in April. So no news this week to discuss, but we are going to add a player to know before the NFL draft. And so here's the list for those that have not been following along. Aiden Hutchinson, edge Michigan; Malik Willis, quarterback Liberty; Kayvon Thibodeau, edge Oregon; Drake London, wide receiver USC; Kenneth Walker III, running back Michigan State; Tyler Linderbaum, center Iowa; Kenny Pickett, quarterback Pittsburgh; Devin Lloyd, the linebacker from Utah; Desmond Ridder and Ahmad Sauce Gardner, the quarterback and cornerback respectively from Cincinnati; Tyler Algier, the running back from BYU; and last week was Evan Neal, the big left tackle from the Crimson Tide. Mitch, this week, another offensive lineman. It's going to be a run of offensive linemen probably here, because I think they all deserve more credit and more respect, and we haven't put enough of them on this list so far. Mitch, the name today, though, big surprise here. Dane Brugler, the draft analyst for The Athletic, I respect his work a lot. I like him. Put out his mock draft 2.0 today, January 19th. The big reveal, the big surprise for him, was his number one pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we talked last week, and I said, my new number one is Evan Neal. I want them to go offensive line. I think that's the right move. Not edge, not Hutchinson, not Thibodeau. Well, Brugler's in agreement there, but he has a new number one, a number one I have not seen from anybody else, Mitch, and that is Ike Mukwonu, the tackle from North Carolina State. Here's what he had to say about putting Ike Mukwonu as the number one pick in his 2022 NFL mock draft. After numerous conversations with NFL scouts and league execs in preparation for this mock, there were two key takeaways that led me to Mukwonu here. First, there are several evaluators around the league who have Mukwonu ranked higher than Alabama's Evan Neal and Mississippi State's Charles Cross. Second, several evaluators agreed that in a draft class missing a no-brainer top prospect, they prefer the tackles over the edge rushers. I have no clue how the Jaguars feel, but Mukwonu at least belongs in this conversation. Interesting stuff there. Now, obviously, as we mentioned last week, I am high on Evan Neal, the big tackle out of Alabama. But Mukwonu, 6'4", 320, plays the tackle. A lot of evaluators view him as a guy that you'd prefer to maybe move inside at guard. If you're a team that wants to move him at guard, then you're not spending the first overall pick in the NFL draft on a guard. But if you could believe that he could play tackle, this is a guy with size and athleticism, has shown consistently in college. His PFF grade of 91.6 this year was eighth in all of college football. He had an 80.6 grade last year and an 80.5 the year before. So has always been dominant at the college level here. Here's more of the evaluation from Brugler here. Mukwonu has impressive movements for his size and generates extraordinary explosion at contact. He lacks refinement and is guilty of oversetting, but he is nimble, powerful, and should get better and better as his technique and awareness mature. Ekwonu's tape shows a tackle who can also play guard, not the other way around. So again, as Brugler mentions here, no idea how the Jags feel. And ultimately that's what it'll come down to. What's the prospect that they fall in love with if it is an offensive lineman, and who do they go there? But an interesting name to watch, certainly a prospect to consider in the top five, especially when you look at the Texans and the Giants and even the Jets. 3, 4, and 5 there. Any of those teams could be looking to add to the offensive line, and a guy that could cook inside or play outside there in Ekwonu. So that is the player to know before the NFL draft this week. Ikem Ekwonu, the tackle from North Carolina State.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to find a guy that could play inside or outside. So, that's a guy, he's got the size and the speed to either play guard or tackle. Tough to come across those guys. Great pick for someone to watch there, man, especially when we're coming closer and closer, and offensive linemen seem to rise up the draft boards as we get closer to the draft, because that's always such a need across the NFL. You can never have too many good offensive linemen. So this is going to be a guy that's definitely going to be someone you're going to want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, certainly. It's interesting this year, Mitch, in the NFL draft, because there is no brainer number one prospect. There's no quarterback at the top of the board that it's going to be Trevor Lawrence no matter what. It's going to be Joe Burrow no matter what. There's no Myles Garrett or Chase Young or, top tier defensive player in that regard. Hutchinson is a very solid prospect. Thibodeau, very solid. All these offensive linemen, Ekwonu, Cross, Neal, all solid. But is any of them more deserving of the number one pick over the other? Like, at this point, not really. So it'll ultimately come down to the Jaguars, what they feel they need, who is that guy that takes it over the top. But it does make for an interesting time of year where everyone's sort of just putting different names out there and different guesses. There's no consensus on this the way that there typically is at this point in the draft process, which certainly makes the 22 draft very exciting as we await that in a couple months.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, Mitch, that's it for the news. So let's take a quick break here and hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, we will reveal our Mount Rushmore and do our quick picks for the NFL playoffs divisional rounds. So stick around, and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back into the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and Dallin. We hope you had a nice break there. Hope you paid attention to those plugs there on the mid-roll, because we really do want you to be a part of the conversation. Go ahead and follow us on anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys. Be just like Sammy and David.
Be as close as you can to them, because you can't be as good as them.
You can't be as good as them. I mean, those are my parents. You'll never be as good as them. But you can be pretty darn close if you
try.
You could try. Mount Rushmore.
Yes.
First time we've brought this up in a while.
Yes.
We've done cities like L.A., Boston, New York, and three different sports. We've done Atlanta. We've done... what was it?
Philadelphia. Dallas,
Philadelphia. I mean, we've done them all.
Chicago.
We haven't done it all, but we've done a lot.
A lot.
And there's a lot more to go. But we would kind of wanted to go a little bit of a different route here, a little bit of a alternative route, if you will. We're going to make a stop in the state of North Carolina this week, Dallin, on the Mount Rushmore tour.
Yes.
We're doing our North Carolina Mount Rushmore. And we didn't even realize this until we started talking through this. It is wide open.
Yeah.
In the state of North Carolina.
There's actually quite a bit. So obviously I have, as far as professional sports franchise is the Carolina Panthers, who have a brief history when you talk about NFL teams, right? One of the latest expansion teams. So not a ton to work with there. Bobcats / Hornets, again, not a lot of history there as their recent NBA franchise. But then you have some great, the college basketball blue bloods, right? North Carolina, Duke. You have Mitch, as we'll probably see from you in this, some NASCAR, right? The roots of NASCAR, heavily rooted in North Carolina. And so we have a lot of different ways to go here. Should be a lot of fun. Got some great honorable mentions. Let's just jump right into this though, Mitch.
Yeah. Do you want to start with honorable mentions?
I want to save them for the end. I want to get into the list, cause I want to spoil and find out who you didn't put on there. Right.
Okay.
But I want to start with an obvious one. I'm pretty sure you have him on here as well. We'd be stupid not to, and it is his Aaron-ness himself. The greatest movie star to come out of the state of North Carolina. I feel 100% confident in saying that. He is the greatest movie star to come out of the state of North Carolina. Michael Jordan.
Are you sure about that?
I am. I don't even need to double check it. I feel full confident that that is correct statement. That, like, you know, Meryl Streep wasn't born in North Carolina or something like that. You know, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
I'm pretty confident in it. Anyway, yeah. But yes, Michael Jordan, who played his college years at the University of North Carolina. Three seasons at UNC, NCAA champion, Wooden Award winner, Naismith Award winner, AP Player of the Year. I mean, you name it. He did it in three seasons in North Carolina. Obviously goes on to have his professional career with the Bulls and the Wizards. Now is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, right? Is a part of the sports world in North Carolina still. But obviously he's making this list for his college accolades is the greatest player to ever play for the Tar Heels.
I mean, yeah, that's a gimme, right? It's a gimme. The greatest North Carolina Tar Heel of all time, Michael Jordan, has got to be on that list. It's a gimme. A gimme.
That's why I wanted to go first. Get the easy ones out of the way. Now it's your turn, my friend. Let's hear it. Who else do you have on your Mount Rushmore?
So, I did go to the NASCAR route.
Of course.
More often than you would think. So
is the rest of the list NASCAR?
No, it's not all NASCAR. let's not do that. I did have MJ on there. So let's just knock that one out of the way. I had MJ. But my number one on the North Carolina Mount Rushmore is Richard Petty.
Okay.
Richard Petty has to be on there. The king of NASCAR, 200 career wins. 200 career wins over 1,184 career starts, 555 career top fives, 712 career top tens. That means that he was over 50% likely to finish in the top 10 than anywhere else in his career.
Wow.
200 wins. He had an all-time career season in 1967 where he won 27 races in 1 year. Now, this was pre-modern era when they ran 49 races in a year. He ran 48 of 49 races in that season. But winning 27 is something that will never be beat. He is king in North Carolina. From Level Cross, North Carolina, that was one of the stipulations, is these drivers had to be from North Carolina because like 98% of all NASCAR teams are located in North Carolina. So if I did that, they would all be NASCAR drivers. But Richard Petty, he's the king, man. Got to have him at the top of the list.
There you go, Mitch. I love it. I did not have any NASCAR, no drivers on my list, but that's fine. I'm excited to, the diversity of this list should be fun. I'm going to go here with the Carolina Panther.
Okay.
This was, when I saw it, when I thought of the name, this was an absolute no-brainer, slam dunk, hit it out of the park. It's Julius Peppers.
Ooh, I didn't even.
Julius Peppers, wow. A son of North Carolina, born in Wilson, North Carolina, played his college days at the University of North Carolina, and gets selected second overall by his hometown Panthers in the 2002 NFL draft. Goes on to have a Hall of Fame career, 9 Pro Bowls, 3 All Pros, defensive rookie of the year. You know, obviously he spent time in Chicago, in Green Bay, played his final 2 years in the black and blue in Carolina. And he is one of those iconic players in Panthers franchise history. He's one of the greatest players they've ever had. And again, a Carolina son, born there, raised there, played his college days there, played his professional days there. It was no question to me, Julius Peppers deserves to be on this list.
That's a great ad. Former Chicago Bear, by the way.
Yes.
But I didn't realize how tied to North Carolina he was. Yeah. So yeah. He's not on my honorable mentions because
but
I didn't
he is know- now. Because you know now.
Now he is, because I didn't know his ties to North Carolina like that.
Fair enough.
I knew he went to school in North Carolina, got drafted by the Panthers, yeah. But I didn't know that he was a homegrown talent there. Yes. So great ad there. No arguments about that. Okay. I am going to stick tried and true to Mitch Mo fashion here. And for number two on my list, I have to go with Ironhead, the man in black. The Intimidator, Dale Earnhardt from Kannapolis, North Carolina. Kannapolis, a small little mill town that you probably would have never seen on a map. That's where Dale Earnhardt is from. That's where he hails from. In my opinion, because of the era that he raced in, the greatest driver that we've ever seen of all time. Even more so than Richard Petty. Dale Earnhardt only has 76 wins compared to Richard Petty's 200, but because of the era that he raced in and the difference of, you know, the difference of the way that the Cup Series was formed when he raced there, Dale Earnhardt, in my mind, even more so over my childhood favorite driver, Jeff Gordon, is the greatest driver that I've ever seen. 76 career wins, one Daytona 500 victory on his 20th try in 1998, tragically lost his life in the 2001 Daytona 500. But the ultimate blue collar guy, he was the everyman's driver. Everyone could get behind Dale Earnhardt because you felt like he was racing for the little guy. One of those guys that you feel like was the heart and soul of America at his time that he was there. And is one of the faces, if not the face of NASCAR all time. Give me Dale Earnhardt to put on this Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great pick, Mitch. A perfect name to put on here that obviously I did not put on mine. But I'm glad that you did, which is why we each have our own. It gives us a chance to highlight all these great players that we neither of us would have thought of, you know,
absolutely.
And great athletes in that regard. So I love that, Mitch. My third name I'm going to go with here is another college basketball name. I'm going with the all-time winningest men's college basketball coach in history, Mike Krzyzewski, the head coach of Duke, who's in his final season with the Blue Devils. We'll be moving on after this season. Longtime coach in USA basketball and more beyond that. But 1,184 career wins for Krzyzewski. He is 93 wins ahead of Jim Boeheim, who is second behind him. And, you know, an honorable mention real quick was Roy Williams for me, the longtime head coach at UNC. And he is a whole 281 wins behind Krzyzewski. That's how great Coach K has been with Duke and how much success that he's had over his long 46 seasons there. So to me, this is a no-brainer just because this is one of the iconic people you think of when you think of sports in North Carolina. And to me, Krzyzewski's more iconic with Duke than any player that's come out of there. We kind of discussed, we were throwing out names, Christian Laettner and Grant Hill, some of the great Duke players with Benzon Williamson, but none of those even come close to the level of impact that Coach K has had. So to me, that was just an easy one to put on here.
He was probably number five on my list. He was probably number five there. So just missing it. My number four though, and I can't imagine he's not on your list, but he has to be on there. If you're this would be so Dallin Graf on brand that he has to be there. I have Cam Newton at number four.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I thought you weren't going to have him. And I was getting ready, Mitch. I put my armor on. I had my shield and my sword, and I was ready to defend my take because it has to be Cam.
So I was so like I could not take Petty or Earnhardt off. I had to have Jordan on.
Right.
So like I was really down to Newton or Coach K. And I think that when it comes down to his impact on society, not just in the world of sports, Cam Newton has a bigger impact as far as cultivating a new brand, a new era of sports fans than Coach K does. He's kind of the old Cam Newton brought in the new. I think that Cam Newton represents that because, you know, you look at the rest of my list, Petty, Earnhardt, Jordan, those are all old heads.
Right.
I had to have a new head on there. And I think that Cam Newton fits that role perfectly. He kind of changed the way the quarterback position is looked at. He brought something new to the NFL when he was drafted in 2010 out of Auburn. Cam Newton just seems to fit that mold to be one of those faces on the North Carolina Rushmore for me.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the Carolina Panthers, the history of the Carolina Panthers and its brightest moments cannot be told without the story of Cam Newton, right? The number one overall pick, as you mentioned, the 2011 draft.
And I mean, when you think about it, by far the best quarterback in Carolina Panthers history.
It's like, not even close. I mean,
Newton and it's Jake DeLome.
And then it's Jake DeLome. Cam leads in all passing categories and wins as a quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. But he brought them to their highest heights. That 15-1 season in 2015 is the best the Carolina Panthers have ever been. They went to the Super Bowl that year. They fell short, but Cam Newton was an MVP. He had 45 touchdowns that year. He was the undisputed MVP at the end of that season. And that team will go down as the greatest team the Panthers have ever had until they have a Super Bowl winning team. So to me, it was a no-brainer that number one Superman Cam Newton has to be on there representing this state and what he has done in 10 years playing for the Carolina Panthers. And it's sad to think his career might be over with them. You know, there's a question whether he'll come back in 2022. You know, we'll see what happens with them. I'm glad I got to have this year with him though. The half a season that he had, he was 0-5 as a starter. It wasn't always pretty, but it just felt good to have Cam back. It felt right to have Cam back with the Panthers. I hated to see kind of how the way things played out when he left. It was good to see those bridges, as he mentioned, whether he comes back or not. He's like, I feel like I mended some bridges and I kind of had the closure that I wanted to have here. And now I feel like I can move on without those harsh feelings. And it's a beautiful thing. That's a tangent for another day. But suffice it to say, Mitch, that Cam Newton is the guy that has to be on here for the Panthers for sure. Obviously, for me, Julius Peppers, you know, had to throw my guy on there. But Cam's the guy. Cam is it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it just to go to your fandom to kind of speak on that too, like, he may not be a Hall of Famer, but you know what? We all have our guy.
Of course.
Whether they're Hall of Famers or not. Yours is Cam Newton. Mine, honestly, is Charles Tillman from the Bears.
Peanut Tillman. He should be a Hall of Famer. Fuck it, I don't care.
That's my guy. So, like, I will always be a Charles Tillman fan.
Right.
You'll always be a Cam Newton fan.
Exactly.
You know, they may not be Hall of Famers, but they're our guys.
He's a Hall of Famer in my heart.
Exactly.
So there it is, Mitch. So my Mount Rushmore here. Mount Rushmore, state of North Carolina. I had Michael Jordan, Julius Peppers, Mike Krzyzewski, and Cam Newton. Mitch, your Mount Rushmore?
I had Richard Petty, Dale Earnhardt, Michael Jordan, and Cam Newton.
There you go. So two of the same picks for us there, Michael Jordan, Cam Newton, different on the others. Give me some honorable mentions, some names that you thought of.
Well, let's go to the often forgotten little brother of the Carolina schools, Wake Forest. Give me Tim Duncan and Chris Paul.
Okay. All right.
Tim Duncan, I feel like more deserves another spot on another Mount Rushmore that I think we'll do in the future. So I left Tim off this one. Chris Paul, you know, great point guard. Let's look at some other Carolina Panthers. I had Christian McCaffrey and Luke Kuechly.
McCaffrey's an interesting one.
McCaffrey was an interesting one. He not enough time. Hadn't had enough time.
Yeah.
But Luke Kuechly also,
of course,
a future Hall of Famer in my mind.
Kuechly was close for me. No Steve Smith, though, because that was the other name I did
have.
Down
Steve, there. Oh, no, so okay. I did have Steve Smith on here.
Okay, because yes, that was Steve the Smith. Other Panther that I had. Kuechly and Steve Smith were my two honorable mentions there from the Carolina Panthers.
I did have Steve Smith. So I also had, let's go to UNC basketball. I had Vince Carter and Roy Williams.
Okay, yeah.
When we go to Duke, I had Grant Hill, Christian Laettner,
right,
and Coach K.
Right.
And then I had two more NASCAR references here. I had Junior Johnson, who I made a post on the Instagram about, one of the great owners in NASCAR history, one of the great innovators in NASCAR history. He was the one who introduced the choreographed pit stop. I mean, one of the great guys that in NASCAR history. And also I had Dale Jarrett. Dale Jarrett was another one from North Carolina that I also had on there. So those were my honorable mentions.
Yeah. I had a lot of similar names to you, obviously those, the Duke players, stuff like that, but you had no Charlotte Hornets. And I feel like that's some mad disrespect to some guys that get an honorable mention. So here you go, Mitch.
Can I name one that I would put on there?
Okay. Give me one.
Larry Johnson.
Wow. Okay. He's not the one I put on here at all. Okay. So there you go. I love Larry Johnson though. And no Kemba Walker. Okay. Sorry. No Kemba Walker here.
No Kemba.
First off, first things first, Space Jam co-star Muggsy Bogues. Okay.
That's a good one.
Iconic, good one. Classic. Come on. Give him some respect. We stand the short kings here on this Sports Hour podcast.
He's a Wake Forest guy too, also, right?
Yeah. Del Curry. Because without Del Curry, there would be no Steph Curry. So he gets credit there for me. Great, great Hornets player, but also father.
Great genetics.
Of the greatest shooter of all time. So that, you know, some bonus points there. And clearly LaMelo Ball is on his way to being one of the greatest NBA players of all time. So, you know, we got to throw him on here dad too early. So
I can't do that one. But
there you go, guys. That's the Mount Rushmore. For North Carolina. That was fun. We'll continue to bring this back in every once in a while as we try to mix things up here. Always fun to do things a little bit different. But Mitch, we got to wrap up the podcast here with our quick picks. And it's the divisional round of the playoffs. Four matchups this week. Last week on our picks, I went 5-1. Mitch went 4-2. Picking the wild card weekend. You know, not too much variance there. There's a couple games here and there that were different. But here we go, divisional round, and let's start the first game of the weekend, Saturday afternoon, Cincinnati Bengals headed to Tennessee, Nashville, to take on the Titans. Titans favored by 3.5 in this game at home. Derrick Henry appears to be set to play on Saturday. That's going to be a huge impact for the Titans. And Mitch, I have been wavering all week on this game. This has been by far the toughest game for me to pick. On the one hand, the Cincinnati Bengals struggle in stopping the run. That's not their strength. It's why the matchup with the Raiders was favorable for them last week, because the Raiders don't run the ball well, and therefore they weren't able to exploit that weakness for Cincinnati. But the team that can certainly exploit that weakness would be Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans. On the other side, the Tennessee Titans have one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL. And they've got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd in a passing offense that is on fire headed into Nissan Stadium on Saturday. So to me, this comes down to which one of those units is going to fail. Is it the Bengals run D? Or the Titans pass D? Whichever one of those matchups fails is going to be the determiner of this game. And I've wavered back and forth, but I am going with the upset pick. Joe Burrow, Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, upsets the number one seed Titans and takes the Bengals to the AFC championship game. I'm taking the Bengals in this one, Mitch.
I think this is going to be a really close game. I think that there is a serious opportunity. We're in a 1 or 2 point game, 1 or 2 point game situation. You made a lot of valid points, But I think if I'm going to take a bet, And I don't even want to touch this game. I don't know what the money line is for this, but I don't want to touch this game. But if I have to pick a winner, give me Tennessee and a close one that doesn't cover the spread, like a 1 or 2 point game. I think that Derrick Henry, who has had a lot of time to recoup from his injury, he's had the 2 weeks off since the end of the regular season to recoup. He's going to gash this Cincinnati defense. I like the Titans getting it done in Music City against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
And a very, very close one. Very close one.
For sure. I think this will be a great game.
I'm not going to be surprised if Cincinnati wins. I won't.
I think it should be close. And, you know, for the Bengals, Trey Hendrickson, another one of their starting offensive linemen, were banged up against the Raiders. So their health is going to be key to, again, stopping this run and having bodies in there. It's not an easy matchup on either side of that. But for me, it's betting on the momentum and the positive energy going towards the Cincinnati offense, as opposed to Derrick Henry coming off of such a long break, expecting him to just come back in and be at that Derrick Henry level again after having not played for half a season. I don't know. It's tough. But again, we've seen Derrick Henry in the playoffs and we know what he can do. That is a terrifying proposition to stop that guy. This should be a great matchup. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love your momentum pick there, taking the Bengals too. Following that game, San Francisco, the 49ers, they are leaving the Golden State to head over to the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field to take on the Green Bay Packers. The number one seed Green Bay Packers right now, the spread set at -6 Green Bay. That could change before the week is over. But right now, as it is, -6 in favor of Green Bay. I got to take the Packers in this one. I really like your preseason prediction, Dallin, of this is Aaron Rodgers' fuck you tour, where he just goes out and he lights it up and he gets them to a Super Bowl and tells them how much basically proves to them how much they actually need him. And I think Aaron Rodgers gets it done against San Francisco. San Francisco red hot right now. Great win last week. They've had a great second half of the season. I don't think they get it done against Green Bay in the frozen tundra. Give me Green Bay and give me them to cover here.
Yeah.
I like Green Bay -6.
I'm with you as well. I would take them to cover here at home. Obviously, I'm picking the Packers in this one. And San Francisco, as the sixth seed in this game, I mean, their hope is to do what they did against Dallas, play stifling defense, disrupt Rodgers, force some turnovers, and just play clean offense. You know, get your points when you need them and just sort of hope for the best. But this is going to be a cold game. Right now, it looks like it's going to be 12 degrees in Green Bay at kickoff. This is winter. This is playoff football in Green Bay. We know how it gets. And this is Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs. So he's not going out against the Niners in the first round. You know, like, he's going to have a shot at the Rams or the Bucks next round, and that's going to be the determiner. Can he get past the NFC Championship game for the third year in a row? Can he finally get past that? We'll see. But, I think at home against this Niners team and Jimmy G, that's a disparity I don't count on, right? Jimmy G and the Niners got the Packers in the NFC Championship game a couple years ago when Raheem Mostert ran for like 200 yards in that game. But I don't think Elijah Mitchell is having a Mostert-like performance against the Packers on Saturday. So I'm with you.
I have a little bit of a maybe prediction here.
Okay.
This will be Aaron Rodgers' audition for the San Francisco 49ers, a team that he grew up as a lifelong fan of, always wanted to play in San Francisco. He's coming to the tail end of his career. San Francisco doesn't know if they're committed to Jimmy G. This will be the game where Aaron Rodgers beats the San Francisco 49ers at home, and Aaron Rodgers will convince the San Francisco 49ers to sign him for the back half of his career, the last few years of his career. Aaron Rodgers will wind up a San Francisco 49er when it's all said and done.
Wow. Quite bold considering they traded up for the number 3 pick in the draft and took Trey Lance. I wonder what happens to poor Trey Lance there in that scenario.
That's true.
But but he might be auditioning for somebody, approving to maybe the Steelers or maybe somebody else. He's the guy to take them over the top next season. Mitch, the first game on Sunday, NFC matchup, the Rams and the Bucks. Bucks favored at home by 3 in this game, in Tampa. Nice weather. We talked about the injuries to Tampa. We talked about LA against Cardinals, how good they looked. Mitch, I had in my preseason predictions Green Bay and Los Angeles in the NFC Championship game, and I'm not wavering from that today. Give me the Rams to upset the Bucks. The Rams are healthier. They're in a better spot. That defensive line is going to terrorize Tom Brady on Sunday. The injuries to this O-line for the Bucks, and last year, that O-line was rock solid. It was healthy. That whole team was healthy when the Bucks made that Super Bowl run last year. Not the case this season. It is going to be Aaron Donald is going to eat limping Ryan Jensen alive if he's not 100% healthy on the interior. And Tom Brady, at 44 years old, cannot avoid an interior pass rush, cannot get the ball off quick enough. This is a tough matchup for Tampa. So give me the Rams to make it to the NFC Championship game and head to Lambeau next weekend.
I believe the beginning of the year I had Tampa Bay and Seattle, which turns out to be a terrible pick. So I am shying off my entire pick, and I am agreeing with you. The LA Rams will get this done in Tampa Bay. Give me the Rams to cover. Rams plus 3.
Yes. Yeah,
I like same. That bet a lot. Just the different dynamics that they have. Tampa Bay is banged up. Tom Brady can do a lot, but as a 44-year-old quarterback, it's going to be tough for him to overcome everything that Los Angeles has coming at him. So give me the Rams on the road on Sunday afternoon. Following that, Sunday evening, the Buffalo Bills, they're headed over to the Midwest to take on the Kansas City Chiefs, the 2-seed Kansas City Chiefs, 12-5. Kansas City right now favorite at -1.5. Those are my ride or die guys. Give me the Buffalo Bills to get it done in Kansas City and cover the spread. Buffalo plus 1.5. I love it. Give me Buffalo to get it done against Kansas City. I know it's going to be a really tough drag out matchup. Probably the best game of the week, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Buffalo, easily, Kansas City. Easily game of the week here.
Best game of the week that we're going to see is Sunday night, but give me Buffalo on the road to will themselves into an AFC title game and then, you know, then beat Tennessee and get into a Super Bowl. That's where I'm at with Buffalo right okay. now.
You know, Mitch, this is an opportunity for us to be correct on our preseason picks because you had Buffalo in the AFC championship game. Excuse me. Sorry. You had Buffalo in the AFC Championship game going to the Super Bowl. I had Kansas City in the AFC Championship game losing to the Ravens, but that's fine. But we need a bit of redemption here, right? This matchup is going to determine, can we get one of those guesses right? Can we get one of those AFC Championship picks right? So I'm sticking to my guns, and I'm taking the Chiefs in this game. I am betting on Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in this game, who beat Buffalo last year at home in the AFC Championship game to go to their second consecutive Super Bowl, who just had an impressive performance against a very good Steelers defense. I am taking Mahomes over Josh Allen. I think Buffalo has been good this year, but they've been far too inconsistent. And yet, at their best, they can do what they did last week, which was suffocate a team and pitch a perfect game on offense. But we can also see costly mistakes when his team needs it and inconsistency in the run game and a defense that doesn't always show up. So I am going to go with the Chiefs and trust Mahomes to get it done, as we've seen him and Andy Reid get it done almost every time until this, up until this point, until we see it otherwise. I just am not going to bet against it. So I'm taking the Chiefs, and I'm going to take them to cover here, the 1.5, and win. And obviously a close matchup with Buffalo.
And I think that it really is a coin flip with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. I think that they could have very similar games.
Oh, yeah. Because Mahomes is also prone for the costly mistakes, and we've seen that more this year than almost any year that we've seen.
But where you're taking Mahomes over Allen, I am taking the Bills defense over the Chiefs defense 7 days out of 7. And I really like Buffalo to make some big stops when they need to. They don't have to hold Kansas City to 17 points.
Right.
All they have to do is hold them to like
under 30.
like 27.
Yeah.
That's all
under
they have
30
to do.
And you have a shot.
24, 27, and you have a good shot. Yeah. So, like, I will take Buffalo's defense to make the stops when they need to over Kansas City's defense making the stops when they need to. I don't think Kansas City's defense gets it done.
Okay. It should be a great game, and it should be a great weekend of playoff games, Mitch, here in the divisional round. All four solid matchups, hopefully some closer matchups and not nearly as many blowouts as we saw in the wild card weekend. But that's going to do it for the quick picks. And Mitch, that is going to do it for the podcast. Guys, we appreciate you sticking around and listening to us babble on about the NFL playoffs and Mount Rushmores and the greatest players. If we forgot anybody, if we had a stupid ass take, if we said something off the cuff that was just so egregious that you need to tell us about it, well, then follow us on social media. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram's at The Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Little Thoint. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you could be a part of the conversation. You can get on anchor.fm/ The Sports Hour Guys and make a splash with your voice. Go ahead, get on there, make, you know, leave a message for us. We will answer, you know, ask us a question. We will put your question here on the episode. We will answer your question. You can also listen to us anywhere that you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Get on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating review, tell us we suck, because that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. That was quite the zinger there, Mitch. I loved that one.
Oh, you know, I misspoke. I said,
but you
splash,
rolled with it so beautifully splash, that I just, like, you know, you nailed it.
Well, you know,
stuck that landing.
Go make a splash.
You're Nastia Lukin up in this bitch, you know?
Nastia Lukin. I'm Katie Ledecky up here making a splash. Go ahead and leave a splash on the Anchor, folks. We want to hear from you. I am tired of going on Anchor and not seeing any messages. Go ahead and get on there. I'm sick of it. Go ahead. Yeah. I'll chew your ass out real bad next week if you don't get on Anchor and ask us some questions. I know you have questions. Just ask us it.
They don't have to be questions. It would be your unsolicited thoughts, your take.
Just say,
you know,
hey, just say,
what
hey,
you
Mitch
think
Mo,
on something.
Just say, hey, Mitch Mo, Dallin, you guys suck. No, that's great, because now,
I mean,
we can get better.
Maybe something a little more constructive than that, but that would
we
be
can
cool
get better.
Too.
We
you
can
take
get better
anything.
From that. So, yeah.
Yes. You've been thoroughly threatened by Mitch here. So there you go. We'll leave it at that. Guys, we appreciate you listening.
That seems a little domestic terrorish.
Well, it was like a mild threat. You said you're going to chew them out. So
I'll chew them out. Yeah, whatever.
That's fine. Sometimes you need it.
I've done it before.
Sometimes you need a thorough evisceration.
Yeah.
Lyrical evisceration.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. Guys, that's it. That's all we got. I'm trying to wrap this up. I don't know how to do it. We love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.